I am happy to announce our 2024 Banking with Life client-only event. It's going to happen Friday, October 25th, beginning with a pre-event social mixer. The day of the event is Saturday the 26th, followed by an after party. It's going to happen downtown Fort Worth. I will be speaking there. Others will be speaking as well. You'll have the opportunity to meet me, and I'm looking forward to meeting you. You'll have the opportunity to meet the whole Banking with Life team and a room full of people that practice the infinite banking concept from all over the country. Last year, we had about 130 people from 30 different states. The year before that was really good, too. This year is going to be even better. We're going to have educational presentations and talks, and that should be important to you if you're practicing the infinite banking concept. I can't wait to see you. In this episode, I sit down with my friend Delisa, a young, knocking it out of the park real estate investor, and she shares with us her experience with infinite banking and how it's helped her become more profitable. I had fun and hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Bank with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm as excited as I can be to have an in-studio guest. If you listen regularly, you know that that's, you know, I get excited about that as opposed to Zoom video type episodes, which they're good too. But this young lady, Delisa, has made an effort to come down here and share with us this morning. It's about maybe an hour, hour and a half in traveling. And this is actually the first time I've had the honor and privilege of meeting her. And she's been practicing the infinite banking concept for a couple of years. And I'm just going to let her share her experience, and if she will, right, with us. So, Delisa, welcome, and tell us about yourself, please.
Thank you. So, my name's Delisa, and I've been in real estate for about 8 years. And I really just came across this through another investor back in Amarillo. And we were in a real estate investing group, and he mentioned this concept. And I said, hey, I'd like to learn a little bit more about it. And we kind of left it at that. Some months passed by, and then I finally just kind of pursued and said, hey, I'd really like to learn. He gave me the information to your office. I called. I got a CD, the book, and some other things. And from there, I kind of just read through the book, listened to some YouTube videos on it, listened to one of your videos, and then just other people's take and perspective on the infinite banking system. And I'm a risk taker. And back then I was even more of a risk taker. And so I just said,
8 years, you look pretty young to be in real estate for 8 years. I'm just saying.
And I reached out to your office, and that's kind of how that started.
So, okay, there's a lot there. So you were in a real estate group. And my encouragement is, if you're new to real estate and you're interested in real estate, I believe you should be part of a local real estate group so you can get educated and meet people in that industry or that, you know, whether they're investors, whatever they are. You know, I encourage that, to be a member of a real estate group. So, and where was that?
This was in Amarillo.
Amarillo.
That's right.
8 years ago.
8 years ago.
Okay. And then so you listened to things, but then you reached out to us and got a book, some videos, right? We call it a starter kit. That's available, you know, at a really discounted price. But that should have entailed something like the book Becoming Your Own Banker by R. Nelson Nash, first book he wrote. And then maybe a Banking with Life DVD.
That's right. That's what it was.
Yes. Okay. And some other things. And so how long was it approximately by the time you were exposed to this idea of becoming your own banker? And then, you know, the videos. And I'd like to kind of know what that experience, if you can, you know, recall what you experienced listening to different perspectives, but also the timeline when you first heard about it. You're a risk taker, and you immediately knew that you were interested in learning more. Mm-hmm. All right, so from that point, kind of your experience, what you listened to, what you read, but then how long did it take you to like take action?
I would say it was probably about a good year, and it was just more. It wasn't so much that I had a lot of hesitations that I didn't jump right into it. It was more, you get busy with real estate, you're flipping, you're buying rentals. And then that kind of just becomes something on the back burner. But yeah, it took me about a good year. And I'm always curious to learn outside of the box. I'm always mm-hmm. curious to learn what are the wealthy men and women of this country doing. And it was just intriguing. But also you have a lot of questions and doubts. And is this really as good as it seems? And is it really going to push my real estate investing forward? And so I think I had a lot of those types of questions. And I will say, though, that it's very healthy to have conversations with someone that has already done it, that can navigate, hey, like, did you have this question? Did you have that doubt? How has it played out for you within your first 2 years of having this infinite banking system for you? And so I think that was really helpful to have that investor where I could text, I could call. If we ever saw each other in the office, I could ask those questions. And that was really beneficial outside of just having the material, having a person to conversate with.
I agree. You know, we do a live event, a client only live event. This will be our third one. I mean, we've done events many years, but client only, Banking with Life. Client only event annually is coming up in October in downtown Fort Worth, Texas. We have the dates. There's a save the date that's been out. But that's a real legitimate benefit, really kind of a need, is to be able to talk with other people at different levels. And that's part of the reason why we do this Banking with Life event with live people. And, you know, I just got to tell you, I don't think you were there last year, which is okay. You have an opportunity this year. But there were like 130, 32 people from like 32 different states that flew in. So when you say you had that one individual, I mean, imagine walking into a room full of 100 people or what have you that are doing it at some level, whether it's real estate, whatever else they're doing, if anything. So it took you about a year, did you say?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's right.
And what was your experience going out on YouTube or wherever you consume social media and watching the different perspectives? Was it pretty consistent? Was the message pretty consistent? Or
I would say it was. And I'm really intentional about making sure that I'm not educating myself just from one source. So I looked at your videos, but I also looked at someone else that was talking about the infinite banking system. And I looked at different outlets of social media. So it wasn't just YouTube. It wasn't just Facebook. Mm-hmm. There was some Instagram and even articles. So I just Googled and read lots of articles. And it just seemed like, hey, this seems really great. It kind of makes sense. It doesn't fully make sense, but yet I'm going to try it.
All right. Because you're a risk taker.
That's right.
And so 8 years in real estate, and you mentioned flipping and renting. So what is that what you do currently? I mean, you
that's right.
A real estate investor.
I'm a real estate investor, and that's really how I've used my life insurance policy, is just to that cash value I use to flip. I use to make the down payments, and then it's just a rinse and repeat. I really use it like a line of credit, and it's really nice because it's so flexible. And I can honestly say it has been a saving grace for about two properties, because if it wasn't for the policy, I probably wouldn't have gotten those properties.
Well, can you expand on that, on those two deals?
So pretty much, even with hard money, there's a lot of lenders that can close fairly quickly, to be honest. Sure. However, there's still some type of documentation that's needed from the lender. There's still conversations to be had. And in real estate investing, sometimes you need to know within hours if you can put an offer in. And so I think that's where it really played a role in knowing that I have that cash available to me and I can just pull it out quickly. And so I think that's just that flexibility.
Timing.
That's
on,
right.
On both of them, timing?
Yep, that's right.
You know, the office building that we're sitting in, and I've talked around or a little bit here and there, but we were next door. This, you know, was empty for a minute. And the bottom line, we're sitting in here because of the access to capital that I had. And there was an offer. You know, I made an offer. They made a counter offer. And then my counter to their counter offer was, yes, if you can close within 10 days, calendar days, not business days. You know, so the first one to the deal with cash wins. I don't care how bad everybody, cash is trash or whatever you want to say. Cash is king.
That's right.
My opinion. Okay. So you're still active in real estate?
I am.
And so you flip and do you buy and hold too?
So right now, just because of the market, I've just kind of transitioned. Me personally, I've made the decision to transition out of flipping and specifically just staying within the buy and hold.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of the cost of capital and just the market as far as prices of properties? And I got to say, me personally, it's like the amount of people that are, you know, flipping and, you know, do all kinds of things short term, just turn the cash, turn. I mean, there's a lot of them. And I don't necessarily want to use the word competitive, but it's competitive, you know, and you've got, anyway, so when did you transition out of flipping?
So we're in 2024, so about a year and a half ago is really when I made that hard transition. I did a couple of flips last year, but not to the extent that I had before. And then this year, there's no flipping.
Not even interested, huh?
No. Not at all.
Is this your, you know, local market, or do you buy all over the country or the state? Or
no, so typically all my rentals and flips have been in the Texas Panhandle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little towns up there.
Absolutely.
So Lubbock, Amarillo.
So really Plainview, Tulia, Amarillo. And funny, I would have investors saying, like, why are you investing in these small towns, the appreciation? And I'm like, I have no competition in these small towns. Like, no one's buying in here. Right. And so it's just been my area that I focus on.
Your little sweet spot
right there.
Right. Is that where you're from, out that way?
Originally, that's where I'm from.
So you're comfortable with the market and, yeah.
Yep. And also just even knowing the communities that you're investing in, that makes a big difference, I will say.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. Okay, so you've used the infinite banking concept, you know, in your real estate, use it kind of like a line of credit, just the access to capital. So if you, like on a fix and flip, you know, there's a, you know, of course a purchase price, and then there's all of the cost to getting it ready to flip. And when you did deals like that, how did you address your loan repayments? You know, you paid premium to create the cash value that mm-hmm. you can leverage, collateralize to go buy the property. Did you have a system, or have you developed a system where? And so my question is maybe more narrow. Whenever you did a fix and flip, did you set payments up, loan repayments between the purchase, the repairs, and then flipping, or did you just do lump sum?
Lump sums. So I would pull the cash out, and then once the house was sold, like flipped, sold, then I'd pay it all back in one lump sum. And I was very intentional about making sure I always paid it back.
Yeah.
And rinse and repeat.
And then now on a buy and hold, I think you said you've used it for down payments, mm-hmm. right? So do you, it is none of my business. And you don't have to share anything that you don't want to, right?
Yeah.
Do you use, and you mentioned hard money lenders, and I get that on flips, you know, without it, you know, it's just part of the deal a lot of the times. But when you buy and hold, are you using conventional third-party lenders or hard money lenders? Or what does that kind of look like?
Yeah. So typically in the past, I would always have flips going on, and then simultaneously I would be buying buying holds. And with this one, I always had private money, and then I would use my insurance policy to either put the down payment, or if I needed to do some repairs, mm-hmm. and that way I could get a tenant in. So I would do it that way. But since I actively had flips, I always used that capital to pay that off. And so that was the beauty of kind of doing both of them at the same time.
I gotcha. And then with your buy and hold, do you how do you address, or have you created an idea or you know, a form? It's really form to cash flow is kind of what I call it. But what do you do with repairs and insurance and taxes? Do you use your policies for any of that? Or
no, to be honest, I don't use my policy for that. I think I really look at my policy as just liquid cash in a sense, and I use it to acquire the properties, do quick repairs, and then pay it right back, and then move on to the next one and use my policy. Just
I got it.
Yep.
I mean, you keep accumulating real estate, and the tax bills are going to continue to go. They're going to continue to go up anyway.
Yes.
But they're just, it'll be on an exponential curve with more properties. Same as insurance in Texas, OMG. And then, you know, the repairs are what they are. So, and I ask that because everybody does something different. You know, you walk into a room full of 100 different people and they're going to be doing 120 different things.
That's right.
And then their perspective and their activities change, you know, just like you're, I mean, it's part of life. And so it's very interesting to me the way people use their policies, you know. And like I said, that changes over, you know, time.
Yeah. And I would say even to that point, I think that's also the beauty of having this infinite banking system is you can have 100 individuals using it 100 different ways. Mm-hmm. You can't say that about a lot of other loan products specifically, right? So even when you go down the hard money, it's either it's for a new build and you have to use it for a new build, mm-hmm. and you have to show that you're using it to build. There's disbursements and you have to prove what the disbursement is for. And so that's the luxury and the beauty of this system is you can have 100 people using it 100 different ways. And that's great.
Yep. And you can get mad and change your mind how you want to do things.
That's right.
You know, if you can control the cash flow, I mean, if you can control the banking function, is it absolutely what it is? That's what the, you know, becoming your own banker is all about. The infinite banking concept is who is controlling the banking function, because it exists, period. It's the oldest profession in the world. I did a little solo on that. And it's the most profitable business in the world. And either I'm saying something and she's, you know, describing things that, you know, we're either out in left field and just, you know, talking about this thing on a podcast, or there may be something here that you might want to learn about, you know. And then Nelson Nash, the creator of the Infinite Bank Concept, the author of the book Becoming Your Own Banker, you know, he said everyone should be in two businesses, whatever it is you do for a living, and then you should finance that. So, and I completely agree. So you've been doing this for
8 years.
No, the real estate for 8 years.
That's right. But 2019 with the infinite banking system.
Okay, so here we're going on in the fifth year. And do you find that to be, I mean, has it helped you in your real estate other than you have access to cash, right? Is that any other observations or benefits or realizations? You know, has it truly made a difference? Because we can all go get a line of credit. Well, we can all attempt to go get a line of credit, right?
Correct.
You know, and then they're going to control that. Oh, yeah, you have a, you know, I don't care what kind of line of credit it is, a HELOC, just business line of credit or whatever. It's $100,000 or whatever the limit is. And as soon as things change for the lender and your balance is $20,000, oh, that's suddenly your new limit. It's just another aspect of control that they have that you don't. So without... You know, there have been other benefits or other things that you've realized over the last 4 years. I mean, has it really made a difference? Because you can go use the HELOCs now or the lines of credit now. How do you, other than control and the cash, you know, is there anything else there that you've seen as a benefit and a value?
Yeah, so I would say mindset. That is... As a real estate investor and just someone that likes to think out of the box and find ways that are not the conventional way of doing things, when you are able to find things that are outside of the box, it just continues to expand your mind. And it continues to expand the thought of, do I have to do things the way they've always been done? Typically, the answer is no. And so when you can, one, find other people that have other opportunities and options, I think apart from the physical flexibility of being able to just get the cash quickly, I would say mindset is a second. And then just the opportunity to interact with people that are pursuing this. It's just a different group of people that you get to interact with that have a different mindset and have even different perspectives. And I always think that's so healthy.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It is the problem and the solution, in my humble opinion, rests between your ears, exactly the way you think. And this really resonates with outside of the box thinkers, because this is, you know, the life insurance companies didn't wake up one day and say, oh, look at this great thing that you can do. You know, it was created from the bottom up. It's not a top down creation, observation, or, you know, really an awakening, if you would, in a financial sense. This is from the bottom up. Nelson has, you know, he shares his story in the first part of the book, Becoming Your Own Banker. And so you kind of get an understanding of, you know, what he had done prior to discovering this idea. And then the actual kind of causes and the pressures of life that, you know, really put him on his knees. And, you know, 2 or 3 a.m., like, oh, God, show me a way out of this prison that I created. And it's like, bam, like a 2x4 mm-hmm. between the eyes, you know. So conventional thinking will get you, in my opinion, conventional results. Mm-hmm. And not to say that everything that's unconventional is good, you should participate in. But this, I have found, resonates with people that think outside the box, you know.
Yeah.
And then when you think, you know, it's just, it affects your thinking. And it's really kind of an exponential curve on your thinking if you, you know, just consider that for a moment. If I'm going to, you know, be a risk taker, and I'm going to look outside of the box for whatever it is that I'm learning about or interested in, that just leads to more and more and more and more. Not that it's all right and good, but, you know, I believe that you'd be able to vet the things that are presented to you. Because, you know, it's just like in real estate, everything that presents itself as a deal is not a deal.
That's right.
It's just not, you know. So having access to capital, has that, in the manner in which you do with the policies, and I understand that, you know, I get the lines of credit, you know, it's there, it's available, and very quickly, you know, has that changed your perspective of what a deal might be at all?
No, I wouldn't say that it has, but I do want to add another benefit is I think of scripture where it talks about not to be a slave to debt and to become a lender. Mm-hmm. What better way to do it than this?
Yeah.
And that for me, even just on my faith walk and on the spiritual side of things, it's how does this empower me to walk in a way that I am not a slave to debt and that I can become the lender. Mm-hmm. And so I would say even on the spiritual side of things, it's been a blessing.
Yeah. Well, I would expect, and, you know, I don't know, but I would expect if you've been buying, either holding or flipping real estate for 8 years, you've had an education in stewardship,
you know. Oh, you better believe it.
Property and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question. And this adds to that, I believe, you know. And it's funny that you mentioned, you know, the borrower servant to the lender, you know. I think we're all born in a debt slave construct. Mm-hmm. Unknowingly in the world, not just in the U.S., you know. And I had a friend of mine who's a local community banker. He came in a couple of weeks ago, and we shot a couple of episodes. and that'll be out, you know, sometime in the future. And about that, and that was about 2 weeks ago. The same week, here's where I'm going with that. I seen a meme like on Facebook, social media, TikTok, wherever, and it said the lender's memory is much better than the borrower's. You know, it kind of resonated with me just because Bobby, the banker, was in. You know,
so yeah,
I agree with that. Do you still participate in real estate groups?
Actually, since I moved, I have not, but I need to find a real estate group. Definitely.
Has it How long have you been here? I mean, how long has it been since you moved?
So it's been 3 years, but I've stayed active back home in Amarillo and in Toya in those groups. I haven't been active here in the DFW area.
I gotcha. Well, when you find one that you like and, you know, it makes sense, let us know.
Okay, I sure will.
I've been pretty active in one in Fort Worth, a couple in Fort Worth over the years, but then, you know, life happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at life insurance because I buy life insurance. I look at that and I'm thinking, man, that's doing pretty good just on its own. And, you know, for the last 20 something years, right? Then the older I get, it's like, that's doing so good. Why would I want to deal with renters and more taxes and governmental entities? And yeah, like, meh. So my view of quote-unquote opportunities are just getting there. I don't know if I'm getting older. I'm getting older, but aren't we all? Or lazier, and I don't really think I'm lazy, but it's just my interest wanes. I mean, it's, yeah, you can make 6, 7, 8, 10%, what of this, or 20%, whatever it is. But then the investor rarely ever counts their time in the deal, ever.
That's right. A very true statement.
Mm-hmm. And then whenever you look at all the cost, I mean, that just, it eliminates deals for me.
Okay.
You know, I'm like, oh, that's really good. So, but yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway. But you know, if you've been here 3 years, it's okay to find a real estate group.
I know.
I'm just saying.
I know.
Have you bought properties local?
I have. So I've bought one in White Settlement in McKinney. Farmers Branch, yeah. In Dallas, and I think that's kind of where I have those four cities.
I was born in White Settlement.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, I still have the property there.
It's been a minute, but yeah. And so you bought, like, so that's three or four here local in the last.
That's really all I've done here locally, just because back home, it's just made sense to continue investing there, and I enjoy it. I know the people. I have a team, and so it just works.
So do you buy properties there as well? You have?
That's right.
And so tell me about your team. You know, what does that look like?
So one of the things that I, in the process of saying, okay, if this is really what I want to do, mm-hmm. what type of team do I need and who needs to be on the team? And quickly, everyone would say, you need a CPA, a great CPA, and you need a financial planner. You need the typical team, like your construction crew. Property manager, and so all those things. But I will say my CPA and the financial planner are always the ones that I need to make sure that are they truly are with me at the table. And even to have input on the infinite banking system, to hear their takes and to even hear, hey, have you thought about using it this way? That is also of benefit. So just because you take the initial step of saying, hey, I want to do the infinite banking system, yet you still need to continue to learn in other ways of using it and how to be more efficient or just have more creative ways of using the money. So one of the things in the YouTube videos when before I said yes, it was they talked a lot about purchasing a car, like the infinite banking system could be a way to purchase your first car. I knew that wasn't what I would use it for. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know how are other people using the infinite banking system. And so that's really been a blessing.
The videos of that?
Yep. The videos of just learning how yep. are people using this.
Yeah. I got it. Now I'm excluding yours.
Okay.
I'm excluding your CPA and your financial planner, but you use creative in the same sentence referencing them. So, and the infinite banking concept, right? So I'm a little hesitant, you know, I mean, because they're great people or they wouldn't be on your team.
Yeah,
so there's no disparagement whatsoever. I'm just saying creativity and a CPA, creativity and a financial planner and the infinite banking concept, not normally adjectives that would be used. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so how can you expand on the creativity of those kinds of situations? You know?
Yeah. So I think when I use, and it may be the wrong word to be using, creativity, but it's just, it goes back to that thinking outside the box, right? So there was even times that I had to show my CPA like, hey, well, what money are you using to finance? So, because they're keeping tracks of my books. And it's, oh, well, I use my life insurance policy. Well, what do you mean you're using your life insurance policy? And so it even becomes a platform to educate those that, and it doesn't mean they're great at what they do, but yet they're not always exposed to the things that I'm exposed to, and vice versa. And so one, it provides great conversation to educate one another. And then when I mean creative, it just goes back to how do I creatively use the Infinite Banking System for real estate or for other businesses that I wanted to purchase. And so that's what I meant by creativity.
So it's just, there's no opposition, you know, because the CPAs do the, what CPAs do. And then financial planners, you know, they do whatever they do. But, you know, in the financial world, everybody, not everyone, it's quite common to see that, you know, I like stocks. So I don't, you know, necessarily know much or very interested in real estate. Right. Investing, active, continuing investing. Like the stock guy would want all your money in stocks. The life insurance guy would want all your money in life insurance. The CPA, you know, they're checking the boxes and making sure you're compliant with Uncle Guido. But then a lot of times they do some type of financial planning or retirement planning. So they all have the qualified plans. So my point here is there's no opposition. You're on a team. They're open. You're open whether you agree 100% on a particular item or not. There's not the opposition.
Correct.
It's like, oh, my gosh, you can't buy life insurance for that. Life insurance is used for the death benefit. That doesn't exist. And, you know, I had a wonderful gentleman on, you know, because the old adage, the fact that iron sharpens iron, you know, when iron sharpens iron, there's some sparks that fly, you know, sometimes feelings can get hurt or misunderstandings or whatever. So I'm just bringing that out. But, you know, I think you're using grace, but they're your team, right?
That's
so
right.
They're your team and they're good. I would have to use grace with creativity and CPA. I'm just saying, you know. But, you know, I might need a new CPA. I don't know. Are they taking new clients?
I'll ask.
Yeah. All right. And so tell me more about your real estate. So you've gone from fixing and flipping to buying and holding. You're buying here. You're buying there. Are you buying one or two properties a year? Or, I mean, over one a year? I mean, do you have a goal? Do you?
Yeah, so I think in my early 20s, or actually throughout my 20s, I was a go-getter. I had every year in October, I planned for the next year of how many properties I wanted to flip, how many properties I wanted to buy. And as I've gotten older, it's truly my faith has become first and foremost. And so there's a lot of flexibility and grace. And it's like, okay, Lord, where are you leading me to? And so I will say I now probably maybe purchase between 7 to 11 properties a year. And so just slowing down. Yeah.
So at your peak, if 7 to 11 properties a year, I mean, that's legitimate, you know, you're working. What was your peak?
The peak would probably have been maybe 15 to 17.
I got it. So you're still working.
Still working. Absolutely. But at a slower pace. Thank God.
Yeah. Is it relatively easy to, you know, find 7 to 11 deals?
So in the market
that fit your parameters, you know?
So in the market that I'm in, I would say yes. And that's the beauty of knowing your market, knowing your community, and when it's a small community, that there's a big blessing. When I'm in the city, it's not as easy. And so I enjoy the market that I'm in. And yeah, so I enjoy it.
Are property managers on your team?
Yes, absolutely. I have three.
Okay.
Three, just for the different towns. Every property manager has their own town that they kind of look over.
Yeah, I gotcha. So one in West Texas and two here?
No. So I have one in Amarillo, one in Toya, and then one for Plainview.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Not one here?
No, I manage those because there's not very many, so I can handle them.
I got it.
Yeah.
And so who else is on your team? Do you have like, you know, surely you have builders or, you know, maintenance crews?
Yeah, so I would have just the contractors.
Yeah,
the contractors. That's really, mm-hmm. And then my mom, She always helps me out with a lot of things. So she's part of the team.
I got you.
And yeah, that's really it, honestly.
It's all you need, huh? Mm-hmm.
And then I will say you need other real estate investors just to be able to really talk through strategy. What are you doing? What are you seeing? And so I would say even they're not formally on the team, they're absolutely part of the team because you need them.
Yeah, yeah. That's another iron sharpened.
That's right.
An iron, you know, yeah. Well, cool. That's very interesting. I mean, you're for 8 years, you've been doing real estate and you're slowing down or have slowed down. That's just 7 to 11 deals in a year. So you've amassed some properties and that, which is maybe if afforded you the ability to slow down if you wish to.
That's right.
So, yes. Cool.
And I will add to be able to have those types of, I always say the biggest luxury in life is not money, it's time. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to have that luxury of time, most people will have to look outside of the conventional way of doing things, right? If we just follow what the next person did, we'll get what the next person has. And so we have to make sure to be open. I think that's one thing that I would encourage anybody that's listening to this is just even be open to the idea. Take the time to look into the infinite banking system. And yeah, so we got to do things differently if we want different results.
Mm-hmm. Yep, no question. Cool. Well, what else would you like to share with us if we...
I don't think I have anything else. It would just be the mindset, the encouragement to be open to the idea. And yeah, that's what I would say. Yes. And go for it. Absolutely go for it. Yeah. It's worth it.
Make it happen, right?
Yeah, make it happen.
So be open-minded, mm-hmm. Outside of the box thinker, and just look. All right, just take the time to look.
Yeah.
And
I will add this. So when I was looking to purchase, I really contemplated like how much, right? Mm-hmm. Do I start off with a policy that's a lower amount? Do I go for that bigger amount? And I would say just start. Even if you start off with a smaller policy, you can always buy another one that's a little bit bigger. I think that would be a big encouragement on my end personally. Just start, even if it's a smaller amount. And then once you see that it actually works, you're going to want to buy more.
I completely agree with that. I would rather make the mistake of starting too small, you know, being too conservative, mm-hmm. dipping my toes in, being comfortable. I mean, as long as I have the health, you have to have health to buy life insurance.
That's right.
But I'd rather start too small and grow. You know, stretching myself, you know, I mean, I think just like your thinking and your mind and your activity, you got to stretch yourself or, you know, you're just not going to grow, in my opinion. As opposed to, I'd rather start too small, and I call it meeting the client where they're at, than starting too big, you know, big, grandiose, beautiful, big premium dollars, and then having to melt it down, burn it down, and start all over later. Because if you're listening to this, you know, over there to the right, you know, every individual that can spell IBC or mention Nelson's name, and I'm not saying they're all bad, I'm not being negative, but there's a lot of information out there now about the infinite banking concept, and it needs to be vetted. And really big numbers make for really good presentations. You know, are there people that pay $1 million in premium? Yes. Yes, there are. 100,000, 50,000, 20, whatever it is, really big numbers. That's not necessary. You don't have to be uber wealthy. Yeah. You don't have to do, I mean, some of the, I'll say that most people in my experience start too small, even if they start out paying $500,000 a year in premium. Okay. And you're probably going to be no different, whether it's, you know, $100 a month, $250 a month, $500 a month, whatever it is, it's starting where you're at. And it's, in my opinion, it's better to start too small and to grow and to learn. But, you know, don't waste any time. There's plenty of time, right? But none to waste. So if you're interested in learning about the infinite banking concept, you know, there's in these show notes, there's, you can go buy the starter kit. And there's plenty of resources for you to learn, whether it's of any interest to you or not. And if it is, man, make it happen. But don't put it off. Go at least learn about it. Man, 8 years, and you've been doing this for 4 years, and you know, I mean, 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. Coming on 5 years, yeah. Sorry. I mean, and you're young. And over a lifetime, it's just like the properties. If you started building real estate, a portfolio 8 years ago, and you're still buying 7 to 11 properties a year, and look at the exponential curve that that's going to create. You know, I mean, it's like, oh my gosh. So if you've laid out the path, right, and there's adjustments along the way, maybe I want to buy more, maybe I want to buy less, maybe I want to move and go to a different market, whatever it is. But all of that time, effort, and energy to learn how to create wealth, real property, real cash flows. And if I may, let me say, if you look at real estate, you know, and let me answer for you, but tell me how accurate I am. I could be totally wrong.
Okay.
The reason you buy real estate is there's several. Number one, you're looking for an asset that you own and you control. You want it to be profitable, right? You want it to be a private asset where Uncle Guido and all whomever's going to have a difficult time separating you from your property. So private property that's a profitable property, and part of that profit is either going to be cash flows, mm-hmm. and or a deferred benefit. You're going to sell the property at a higher value later. That's a deferred benefit, right? So you have cash flows, private property, income, right? Cash flows, income, and a deferred benefit. And then there's some preferential tax treatment if you practice real estate correctly and you have the team that step up in basis, depreciation, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. 1031 exchanges. Those are benefits that come with real estate and that you can take advantage of. Okay, so I'm just saying private property, appreciating property, cash flows, preferential tax treatment. Oh, and then you're actually providing a service for your clients as well, aren't you? You're giving them a place to live, not giving them, but you're making it an opportunity available so people don't have to sleep in the rain. All right. Okay, what did I miss?
I think you got them all.
Okay, now let's look at some of the those are just characteristics of life, of real estate investing, right? In real estate. Let's look at consider the characteristics of life insurance. If I buy life insurance, it's private property. It's none of your business. You know, it's none of my business to the extent, you know, other than an agent. It's like, it's none of my business, right? Private. Wow. What a virtue in today's world. Okay. It's a cash flowing, you know, it can throw a cash flow and it's only going to go up in value. Right. And then I get a control within limits, too. I left out that. But you have control of the cash flows with real estate. All right, too. So you have life insurance, private property. It's an appreciating asset. It has cash flows. And then there's preferential tax treatment. And then there's a deferred benefit because you can't buy life insurance without a death benefit. So I'm calling it a deferred benefit. It is. It's a death benefit, a face amount. There's something out there later. And there's the preferential tax treatment. If you look at the characteristics of life insurance, built, you know, for the banking function, which doesn't mean you have to contort a policy structure, right? You don't have to do that. But if you look at the characteristics of life insurance and the characteristics of real estate, they fit like hand in glove, you know, anyway. So
that's good.
Thanks for letting me share that.
Yeah, no, that's really great. I don't think I had thought through the similarities of them. So that's really good to hear you say that out loud.
Yeah. So you're welcome. Thank you for saying that. But I don't care what you're doing. You know, if you're knocking it out of the park in real estate or whatever you're knocking it out of the park in, it takes capital. And before you can become your own banker, and banking is nothing but the movement of money, right? Deposits, withdrawals, loans, loan repayments. It's just a movement of money.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before you can get into banking, where you actually are lending money, of course, and I'm not talking about the Babylonian banking system now that has no legal reserve requirements. Are you aware of that? The U.S. banking
system? I've been learning about that. That blows my mind.
They do not have to have $1 on reserve. Not one. Everybody in the infinite banking world, and for years we've used the word, oh, 10%, you know, they can lend out 10 times. You put $100,000 on deposit, they can lend out $1 million. No, no, there is no limit. Just think that through, yeah. Right? But before they're supposed to have, or, you know, at one time you had to have, and you actually should have, because you can't leverage the money. Like, I can't print money out of thin air like the banking system. Right?
Correct.
So, before they can lend money that they don't have, right, and create digits that they don't have, they have to have some kind of reserve, right, although it's not required. And you can go to FRED, Federal Reserve Economic Data, and it'll just show you, it'll tell you that, right? And we can't leverage money, right? But if we, before we get into the banking position, before we can actually control the banking function or start controlling the banking function, we have to have capital. You have to formate capital. You have to create capital. You have to have capital. And if you're going to knock it out of the park in real estate or whatever it is you do, all of that, every bit of that requires capital. And your capital should maybe have a primary place of residence. And it may not be the best place to put it as a brick and mortar bank for all of your capital, right? And there's plenty of places that you can put your capital. But if you expose yourself to this idea and do some deep dive and do some vetting, you'll be hard pressed, in my opinion, to find a better place to put capital as a primary place. And then from that reservoir, that operating account, you know, I'm not saying life insurance is life insurance, right? It's not an account. They're not deposits. They're premiums. They're loans and loan repayments. But I don't know of a better place to accumulate a massive amount of capital to do that's required to do the things that you're going to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you control that and you enjoy all the characteristics of the life insurance, like the real estate. It's like, man, there, whatever else there is, I don't know what it is, but it would be dang near nirvana, in my opinion, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm ranting. I don't
mean to. You're good. You're good. You're good.
Okay. Anything else you want to share before you go?
No, I think that's it. I think we covered it.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you for coming down.
Absolutely.
I greatly appreciate it. I enjoyed meeting you, and I enjoyed meeting your mother.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, too.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.